athletic competition. It can easily be broken down into two parts: the minutes or hours it takes to complete the event. Then weeks, months, and years of joy or heartbreak. Finally, the decades to analyze and debate it. From the press box to press row, Donald Ware will break it all down for you with an in-depth look at historically black college athletics, as well as the biggest news stories and newsmakers of the day. It's time to talk the talk with those who walk the walk. From the press box to press row, here's your host, Donald Ware.
It is officially the summertime as we wind down the month of June. Ecstatic that you've joined me here today on Box to Row. We're in Raleigh and it is super duper hot. Super duper hot already. But I tell you what, we got a hot show for you. As a matter of fact, we're going to talk some NBA. Mike Wallace, the senior editor of Grind City Media, going to join us on the program. And look, the Celtics winning the NBA championship. I mean, I don't think there, to me at least, there was no doubt that this was going to happen. Yes, I realized that the Mavericks won a game and could have gone on a run, but you're asking the Mavericks to then come back for to game five in Boston on Monday and to have somewhat of a game that the Mavericks had in game four in Dallas. It wasn't going to happen. The defense of the Celtics was stifling. The offense led by Tatum and Brown was exceptional. And another title for the Boston Celtics. Now number 18, the 18th NBA championship for the Boston Celtics. And look, a lot of the talk this week has been about dynasty. And not that the Celtics are currently a dynasty, because I think to be a dynasty, to me right now, if I said, okay, what's the team in professional sports, or, I mean, mostly professional sports at this juncture that is a dynasty? To me, the Kansas City Chiefs are a dynasty. Three super, but to me, you have to have won three championships in a five, in a, at the minimum a 5 year span. And you have to have gone to, you have to have won back to back championships in order, in my mind. That's just how I would define a dynasty. Now, that's modern day, right? Because I really think when you think about the term dynasty, and what a dynasty represents, what it is. I think when we're talking about dynasties, you have to talk about in the future, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, can you look back on a team and say that that was a dynasty? I think in today's terms, because of the way that we're so, it's just a rush to, it's a quick rush to judgment with everything. We're always caught up by the stats. The stats kind of drive everything. I think even when you look at, you know, Hall of Fames and players going into the Hall of Fame, it's going to be more driven now by stats than it was previous. And I realize part of that, especially when you're talking about, let's say, the National Football League or the game of football, is because the game is played differently. So running backs that back in the day didn't have the yardage that a lot of these running backs that have today, or those running backs have today, we're going to look more at the numbers as opposed to the eye test in today's game. Okay, even in basketball, that's why I was always perplexed by the fact that Bobby Dandridge, up until what, last year, a couple of years ago, was not in the Pro Basketball Hall of Fame. You're talking about, and remember, when you're talking about the Naismith Hall of Fame, it's not, and I say pro basketball, it's not pro basketball, it's the Naismith Hall of Fame. So the Naismith Hall of Fame encompasses the entirety of basketball, basically, from high school to the pro level. It's not just about the NBA or at the pro level, because if you look at the Pro Basketball Hall of Fame, you have high school contributors or high school, for instance, Morgan Wooten most comes to mind as the great coach at DeMathis, sent many, many players not only to college, but ultimately to the NBA. And you've got a bunch of Hall of Famers that he coached while at DeMathis. So it encompasses all. And if you look at Bobby Dandridge's career, numbers aside, by the way, I think he had a career average of like 18 points per game. The Bucks, and look, I wasn't around when the Bucks won that championship in the 70s with Bill Walton and Oscar Robertson. Certainly Bobby D was part of that team and an integral part. But I would think that because Bobby Dandridge was big. Like, if you look at the history and research the history, especially in the playoffs, like, he stepped his game up in the playoffs. And he stepped this game up tremendously. Now, I realize we're going back to the numbers, but really, numbers are okay when you don't really have the eye test or other forms of metric to really decide upon your argument. And look, Bobby D's numbers were tremendous for the Bucks in the playoffs, so I would make the argument based upon that had it not been for Bobby Dandridge, the Bucks would not have won that NBA championship back in the 70s. Same thing with the Washington Bullets in 1978. You had Wes Unseld, you had Elvin Hayes. Even though Bobby Dandridge may have been on the backside of his career at that time, he still was an integral part of the then Bullets, now Wizards, winning that NBA championship in 78, and his numbers were better in the playoffs than they were in the regular season. So it always bothered me that Bobby Dandridge was not in the Naismith Hall of Fame, but he now is. So back to the dynasty piece. Look, I think you have to really define dynasty. And I'll say the Chiefs because I'll play the game. Fine, if you want to talk about dynasties and who is a dynasty now, I'll play the game. The Chiefs, to me, would be the team that's a current dynasty because of the 3 Super Bowl wins in the last 5 years and back-to-back Super Bowl champions. Are the Celtics a dynasty right now? No. Are the Celtics on their way to being a dynasty? Perhaps, but again, one NBA, and again, they've been knocking on the door, no doubt about it. Last year lost in the Eastern, in the finals, got down 3-0, came back, forced a game 7, were probably worn out by that time and could not get over the hump, has been to a couple of Eastern Conference Finals, lost in the NBA Finals, having a 2-1 lead, by the way, against the Golden State Warriors going back to 2022. But are the Celtics on their way to being a dynasty? I can't really say that. Yes, Jaylen Brown is spectacular. Yes, Jason Tatum is spectacular. But to me, years have to go by before I can look, and then I can look back and say, was that team a dynasty? Because even with that, as the way that I look at a dynasty, three championships or three titles in a 5-year period, to me, would therefore constitute a dynasty. Maybe we can go back and look at a team as a dynasty, even if the team didn't really meet that criteria. And again, within that 3 championships in at least a 5-year range is what I would constitute, again, as a dynasty. Even if a team didn't win back-to-back titles, history would tell me if that team was in fact a dynasty. So I think we have to kind of be careful in terms of how we define teams and how we talk about whether a team is a dynasty now in this day and age. To me, a true dynasty is time will tell if a team is in fact a true dynasty. And look, the Celtics have all the makings. I mean, look at the squad. The squad is locked up in terms of contracts. Again, as I mentioned, I didn't think, again, Kristaps Porzingis, huge in game one, big in game two, didn't play in game three or games three or four, played in game five and had a marginal impact. You know, but it was definitely a team effort, but it was led by Tatum and Brown to give the Celtics their 18th championship. One more championship than the LA Lakers. So right now the Celtics are the king of the NBA when you talk about titles, and you got to figure that at some point. And again, trajectory-wise, on their way to perhaps winning more titles. But again, the only team that I've seen to win back, I mean, what was the last NBA team to win to win consecutive championships? Was it the Heat? I think it was the Heat. Was it the Heat? Was it 12 and 13? Or was it 13 and 14? I can't remember. I think it was 12 and 13. The Heat had won the championship the Heat did win consecutive championships. Prior to that, it was, I believe, the Lakers in 2009 and 2010. Look, it's hard to win a championship. To do it back-to-back is saying something very special. Can the Celtics, in fact, do it next year? In my mind, it's very hard to say that the Celtics can do that because there are so many different dynamics now. And you got to figure that the NBA, there's so much parity. The West is going to be better. I don't even know if Dallas comes out of the West on next year. So that is definitely a conversation that can be had. But if you ask me odds and say, in terms of who would win the championship next year, even though I believe the Celtics have the best team, would I take the Celtics or would I take the field? Right now, I definitely would take the field to win next year's NBA championship. So we've got more NBA talk. Again, Mike Wallace, senior editor of Grind City Media, going to join us on the program. Plus, we're going to talk Willie Mays, the Say Hey Kid, who passed away at the age of 93, on Tuesday. Keep it locked.
Do you feel like the cost of car ownership has gotten out of control? Take charge by refinancing your auto loan today. One call to Rate Genius can save drivers an average of $1,200 per year. The loan specialists at Rate Genius have helped people for more than 20 years replace high-interest auto loans, lower their payments, and spend less in interest. Rate Genius works with over 150 lenders to find you the most competitive terms. Customers lower their rate an average of 3 percentage points. That's huge savings. It's absolutely free to apply for refinance through Rate Genius, and when you refinance your auto loan, you won't owe a payment for 45 days. Make the 5-minute no obligation call today and get on your way toward affordable car ownership. Call 800-958-0341, 800-958-0341. That's 800-958-0341. Rate and payment values are calculated by using the average savings for customers from January 1st, 2022 through December 31st, 2022. Not all applicants qualify for a loan or rate savings. Actual offer terms, including APR, are determined at the time of your application based on credit worthiness. Value of the vehicle loan term and other.
Now, back to From the Press Box to Press Row with Donald Ware.
Hold it now. Oh. Come on.
Still to come here on the program, Mike Wallace, senior editor of Grind City Media, going to join us. Right. Talk some NBA, talk some LA Lakers coaching search. And just like that, Monty Williams, now former head coach of the Pistons, was fired on Wednesday. On Thursday, it was announced that he may be in the running for this head coaching job as well. So we're going to get all of that, all of the perspective from Mike Wallace. Again, he's the senior editor of Grind City Media here, still to come on the program. A sad day, and maybe more so a celebration this week in the world of sports. Willie Mays, one of the greatest athletes that sports has ever seen, passed away on Tuesday at the age of 93. He played his last year playing Major League Baseball was a year before I was born in 1973. So I never had the pleasure of seeing him play. The only thing that I can go by is some of the numbers that you look at. And it's interesting because I've got a baseball and a football card collection that's pretty vast. And in some of that, I've got some basketball cards, a few hockey cards as well. And as I look on the wall, I was thinking to myself as I think about this collection, and I don't collect. I stopped collecting cards probably, I would have to say, sometime around the early part of the 90s. But I've got this great collection, got a lot of really big name cards. I know the cards aren't what they used to be. I don't know how valuable the collection is. I mean, I'll give you an example. I've got an O.J. Simpson rookie card. Now, how valuable is that especially with all that happened with O.J. Simpson? Not really sure, but I legitimately have an O.J. Simpson rookie card. I've got, man, I've got like a bunch of cards from 1957, Tom Landry, when he played in the National Football League. I mean, so many cards, right? But I'm looking at on the wall for my birthday, my family 1 year, this is probably going back, I don't know, 10, 12 years ago at the minimum, put like a bunch of what, and they did a really good job with this. Some of the more valuable cards, or maybe not the more valuable cards, I shouldn't say it that way, but the better athletes, the better players in like this card, I don't want to call it a rack. It's not really a rack, but you know how, if you had cards back in the day and you had these sheets and you put the card in the sheets, and the sheets could hold like 9 cards on one side, 9 on the other. But it's more like a sheet that hangs on a wall, right? And so I'm looking at the Willie Mays card. This may have been Willie Mays, probably a 1962 card if I had to guess. And right next to him, Jim Brown. Next to Jim Brown is Cal Ripken. To the left of Willie Mays is Dr. J, and then on that same row is Walter Payton. So my family did a really good job. They really understood sports because, I mean, when you talk about those five, I mean, you're talking about five of the greatest athletes to ever live, right? But when you think about Willie Mays and his career, and did not get the great fortune or have the great fortune of seeing him play, I know, you know, about the catch that he made that enabled the then New York Giants to go on and win the World Series. By the way, never won a World Series. I was very surprised because I had to go back and look. So when I went back and looked, Willie Mays was only part of a team that won one championship. And look, it's hard to win a championship, right? But I think about some of those teams when he had, like, Willie McCovey was part of some of those teams. And towards the latter years, Bobby Bonds, of course, the father of Barry Bonds, was part of those teams. And but look, you think about, you look at the numbers, right? 24-time All-Star. He made the All-Star team 24 times. He had 600 home runs in his career. He batted in excess of 300 for a career, okay? Had 100 RBI 10 times in his career, right? Like, all that he was able to do as a player and was noted as the best. And you're talking about a time, he came up in a time when you're talking about, you know, Mickey Mantle. This was sort of post, you know, Joe DiMaggio and, you know, Ted Williams and that crew, and it was more about Mickey Mantle. And matter of fact, the argument from what I understand was who was the better player between Mickey Mantle and certainly Willie Mays, right? You look at all of these accolades and a phenomenal player, but this is the thing. He started out his career and if you were coming through during that time, we might add that he also had a 2-year stint in the military. Okay, so much like we talk about Ted Williams and how great a hitter, and Ted Williams was a great hitter, right? In the time that, you know, prime of his career, he left to go fight in World War II, came back, was still a phenomenal player, a phenomenal hitter. Well, Willie Mays also took a couple of years off to serve his country as well and came back as an outstanding player. This was like between 52 and 54, I think, is when he took the time off. So he had just was sort of getting his career started, took the time off, served his country, and then came back to the Giants, where the Giants went on to win a World Series. But like a lot of the players, black players that started their careers around that time, like a lot of the players, Willie Mays started his career in the Negro Leagues. Now, when he started, Jackie Robinson had already broken the color barrier. You had players that were in black players that after, of course, Jackie Robinson. One most notably comes to mind is Larry Doby, who was the first black player in the American League with the then Cleveland Indians, played, of course, his collegiate ball at Virginia Union. So like a lot of the black players of the time, he played in the Negro Leagues. And from all accounts, you look at some of the numbers, he was an excellent player. People, and what I thought was interesting in one of the stories that were told, and look, he grew up around Birmingham, played for the Birmingham Barons of the Negro League, right? And, I mean, was there, and I get it, we've got the new Birmingham, and there's, you know, a black mayor in Birmingham and all of those kind of things. But as I've said on this program many, many times, and part of the New South and all that, you know, when I hear Birmingham, and I've been to Birmingham, and I like Birmingham. Like, I've been to Birmingham. I've spent some time in Birmingham. I have no problem with Birmingham. But when I think about the history of Birmingham, or when I think about Birmingham, the history of Birmingham always comes to my mind, and in particular, the negative history, the bombing of the 16th Street Church, Bull O'Connor, who by the way, was the, in history says, was the play-by-play voice for, one of the minor league teams, or the minor league team that was there in Birmingham, that actually shared the stadium with the Birmingham Barons. Okay, so he grew up in played in perhaps the worst city. Now, in terms of race relations, now, you know, maybe in the latter part of the 40s, early part of the 50s, you didn't have, I mean, it was racism, no doubt, and Jim Crow throughout the South, but maybe you didn't know to what extent of how bad it may have been until really the 60s came around. But that said, he was in the South playing in Birmingham. He was so good, as one of the stories that I heard told here in the last couple of days, that even the white fans and audience was coming to see him play. Now, you think about the Black Barons, and during that time, if you wanted to see the team that was the minor league team, there was a section for black patrons to sit in, probably paid the same amount of money, okay, but still had to sit in a section where I would imagine if it were the Black Barons, then you could sit anywhere when the Black Barons played their home games at that stadium in Birmingham, I would imagine. But he was so great that even white patrons were flocking to these Birmingham Baron games to see Willie Mays play. Okay, and much like most of the players that were really great, unfortunately, a guy like a Satchel Paige did not, he played his prime in the Negro Leagues. And nothing, not that it was unfortunate that he played in the Negro Leagues. It was unfortunate that he didn't get to play outside of exhibitions against some of the best players in Major League Baseball. But he did, you know, he was able to eventually play in the Major Leagues. But he was so great. And then, of course, he went on to Major League fame, a World Series championship, 24, as I mentioned, 24-time All-Star in Major League Baseball. Played the majority of his career, played like a year or something like that, came back to New York and played like a year, his last year with the Mets. Willie Mays, and I'm thinking in my lifetime, I don't know, maybe Ken Griffey Jr., someone I got to see play, maybe the closest you could say was like a Willie Mays. One of the greatest players, athletes, to ever play any game, Willie Mays. We salute Willie Mays, passing away at the age of 93. Up next here on the program, we're talking NBA with Mike Wallace, senior editor of Grind City Media.
You're listening to From the Press Box to Press Row.
Here with Stephen Curry, your progress from Davidson to now with Golden State.
Where I've come from in high school into a small D1 college at Davidson. And it's a great story, and I'm just having fun, you know, living my dream and riding the ride.
Main event! Jey Uso joining us here. Could there be a possible return to the bloodline?
For me?
Yes. At some point.
I'm gone, D. Hey, I threw the deuces up before. I'll do it again, man.
Come on, main event. That's family, man. I mean, I'm not talking about now. I get it. But down the line, like, come on.
Hey, D, you see how they be treating me, man? Come on, man. That something. It be your own family sometimes be doing you wrong, Lou. I gotta go, man. Hey, I'm doing all right by myself.
She's Simone Biles.
Actually, really fun. Like, to be honest, had a lot of fun. We were like, oh, of course, like, we're in the best shape of our life. We're feeling confident about our body, and we hope that other young girls and women, like, feel that being strong is still beautiful.
The one and only Michael Strahan, and cannot have you on without talking about Texas Southern. Cannot. So how did you ultimately end up at Texas Southern?
Yeah, from Houston, grew up in Germany. When I was a senior in high school, my dad said, I'm going to send you to stay with your uncle in Houston and get a football scholarship. So I went to Houston. I played at Westbury High School for 1 year. Texas Southern was probably the only school that saw me play, being right there in Houston and being a local boy. And Coach Walter Highsmith, I went over to see him, and he offered me a scholarship. It was perfect for me, man, to go to the HBCU, to go to Texas Southern. The size of the school, the education they gave me, not just in the classroom, but about life. I would have been swallowed up at another school. I wouldn't have felt as if I really could have made a difference or had a real purpose of being there. But at Texas Southern, I always felt like I could make a difference and I had a purpose.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Skylar Diggins of the WNBA. Thank you for having me. I'm excited. You know, just been able to work a lot on my body and my shape, and a lot of things that I feel like I needed to work on in the offseason, was able to get that done, and, you know, it's showing.
Snoop Dogg is on the mic. Pay attention.
I appreciate the love that I get, and I appreciate the sport of hip-hop, and it's given me back that same love in return, you know, for the amount of years that I've been doing it. I've always went into it with the same, you know, spirit of I make music for the people. I make it go for them, and I always make them a part of it. I never separated myself and tried to be a star. I've always wanted to be one of the people that you can look to as somebody that was, you know, like your uncle because of the way that I treat people, and I feel like my career is representative of that. That's why the longevity is there. That's why the love is there, and that's why I maintain the status of, you know, being relevant for so many years.
I'm talking about none other than Serena Williams.
That was definitely one of the better matches I've ever played. I've had it just like that. You know, I was really focused, just really, you know, excited.
Demetrius Flannery, a.k.a. Lil Meach.
Shit, in Atlanta, told me that he was going to move me from my hometown, Miami, to L.A., put me in acting classes, and I had to go 5 days a week, 2 times a day. I only had about a year and a half, but once I started, I didn't want to stop, you know, so once in a lifetime opportunity, I didn't want to watch somebody else, you know, get the role of playing my father and me having to watch him on TV. Opportunity passed me by, so I just buckled down and just focused, man. Put everything to the side and made sure that my number one thing that I wanted to do was focus on being the best possible actor I can be for the show. And that's how it happened, man.
That is the voice of Kevin Durant.
Oh, yeah, well, I'm just, you know, trying to get better every single day. We've been through a lot as a team, and I enjoy playing with a great group of guys. So, you know, I'm just trying to enjoy every moment of it.
That is the voice of Common. You went to Florida A&M.
Oh, FAMU days were some of the best days of my life. I mean, I had so much fun there. It was like invigorating. It was an introduction to a new aspect of culture in the world. I mean, the Southern girls is just incredible. you know, the food was great. The black college experience, you can't beat that.
Kyrie Irving.
Playing at Duke for Coach K. What was that like and how that prepared you for the league now?
Playing 11 games, you know, a lot of people think that's not a big package for you to become a better player. But for me, it was. Playing for Coach K, he gave me the keys to the car, and I was driving it in first 8 games. And you know, being a part of something special like that and having a brotherhood built at an institution such as that one is an experience that you never forget.
Ice Cube has been our guest.
Hey, man, thanks for letting me talk a little music, movies, and sports. Hey, my favorite three topics.
Hey, y'all. It is the EST of WWE, the strongest, the fastest, the roughest, the toughest, the quickest, the greatest, the best on Box to Row. Tune in if you want to catch the best BEST interview ever.
From the Press Box to Press Row is the sports talk show that is the voice and the talk of HBCU sports, with a flair for pro sports talk and entertainment. Check the show out online at BoxToRow.com.
That's Box to Row, real, relevant radio. Even though the NBA finals are over, still plenty of NBA to talk about here on the program. And to do that, we are joined, you know, many years. For those that are new listeners, we have some new radio stations that are now carrying Box to Row. Mike Wallace is the senior editor of Grind City Media, specifically covers the Memphis Grizzlies, but he's been covering the NBA for in excess of 20 years. His history goes back to ESPN.com or ESPN and ESPN.com, where, of course, he covered the Miami Heat during the LeBron James era and pre-LeBron James, when Dwayne Wade and, of course, Shaq and others won that NBA championship. He knows it all, and we've got so much more to talk about, and we appreciate having Mike Wallace on the program. What's going on, Mike?
Hey, what's going on, D, man? Good to be back on with you again. Good to be back with your listeners across the country, and you're right, man. We got so much going on, recapping the NBA season, looking forward to this transactional offseason. A lot to get to, man, and I'm blessed to be back with you.
Absolutely. When it was announced that Monty Williams had been fired as the head coach of the Pistons, I was surprised. I would say further surprised when the following day it was said that he is in the running. And, of course, J.J. Redick has now been named the head coach of the Lakers. Mike, your thoughts? This has been percolating for quite some time, even with the Monty Williams talk. Your thoughts on J.J. Redick now as the head coach of the L.A. Lakers?
Yeah, it seems like this is something these two sides have been flirting with for the better part of a month or two. And, you know, they went through the Dan Hurley courtship. And, you know, Hurley said no thanks to, you know, 6 years, upwards of $70 million. And it looked like the Lakers were going to go back to, you know, J.J. Redick. They started off with him there. We've seen, you know, two of the most preeminent NBA basketball reporter insiders in Adrian Wojnarowski with ESPN and Shams Charania with, you know, with his network there doing his thing too. And he's a national global guy. And they both had, you know, one had Redick, one had Hurley. But at the end of the day, it seems like it settled down to Hurley wanting to stay at UConn and Redick taking this position. Now, the next question is Redick going to surround himself with the kind of staff that will give him a chance to be successful? You're already seeing the names pop up. There was a reported, you know, name with Rajon Rondo joining that staff, him getting some more veteran coaches. I wouldn't be surprised if I'm J.J. Redick, I'm going to go reach out to Coach K and say, hey, can you come and be a senior advisor? You don't have to be on the bench. You don't have to travel to the road games. Just come out and help me orchestrate this staff and give me some of the wisdom and guidance from those days at Duke. And all of these guys respect Coach K and that pedigree. So good job by the Lakers to finally get this done. It was sloppy. And you got to wish J.J. Redick the best. He's smart. He's well-connected across the league. And I think he's too smart to be anything but successful. The question is, will he have the time in order to resonate and have the success that he's capable of having? Monty Williams, tough blow for him. You and I both know him. I went to school with him. You know, I was at Potomac with him on a basketball team years ago. I followed his career. He lived around the corner from where I lived. As he grew up and I grew up, he's a few years ahead of me. But I followed his success as a coach and as a player throughout his career. Now I'm happy for him from the standpoint Detroit wasn't an ideal fit for him, but you couldn't say no to the money that they threw at him. And we'll see where that buyout lands. But to have 5 years and $65 million left on your contract, you're in a good place to be right now.
I mean, my understanding, I mean, he was going to take a year off and not even take this job with Detroit. I guess the money lured him in because Detroit was awful and not, it's just a bad team. It's not necessarily because of him. It's just a bad basketball team. So, but why, and I know Trajan Langdon got hired, another homie Troy Weaver is out as the general manager. Why did it take so long? Was this Trajan Langdon's decision to in fact fire Monty Williams?
I would think that if Trajan Langdon wanted Monty Williams, and I got to go back and look and make sure the math adds up. I think they may have overlapped some in New Orleans when he was there and Monty was there years ago. It may have been, they may have missed each other, but it was pretty close. If Trajan wanted Monty, I think Monty would still be there. I do think it says a lot about Tom Gores, the owner, that he was willing to say, okay, what I did to put this offer together to make this man the highest paid or one of the highest paid coaches in the NBA, I gave him unprecedented access to team travel and his wife and his family to make sure they were accommodated. He went above and beyond to make that offer, and it was a substantial, lucrative, life-changing offer just a year ago. To do that and say, you know what, my bad, we need to go in a different direction because I want to do right by my front office now, that says a lot about Gores. And people can criticize him for giving Monty the deal, but you got to give him credit for saying, okay, this isn't working, and being willing to, you know, about face and do it this way, knowing that it was going to cost him. So, you know, Monty is in a situation, man, where, you know, his current wife was going through some health battles. She was, stricken with cancer, and she was fighting through chemotherapy at the time. And he wanted to take a year off to devote his time to her and his family. He had just, you know, several years ago, 5-6 years ago, lost Ingrid, his first wife, in a horrible car accident in Oklahoma City when he was an assistant coach there. So the personal tragedies and the challenges that he's gone through speaks for himself. But he's a man of faith. He's a man of integrity. And he, at a certain point, you can't say no to the kind of money that he was given. $87 million guaranteed to coach the Detroit Pistons. He had to take that job, even though he tried to back away from it at first. Now, having said that, he might take a year off at this point. You know, he could be a factor with the Lakers, but I don't know emotionally if that's something you want to get yourself right into right at this point.
Yeah, no question about that. Mike Wallace, the senior editor of Grind City Media, we're talking some NBA here on the program. Let's talk basketball. We're just coming off the NBA Finals. I mean, I thought top to bottom, or I always thought that the Celtics were the best team in the league. I know a lot of people talked about the Mavs in this Finals. I mean, to me, I didn't think that the Celtics necessarily needed Porzingis to win this Finals, and at least the last couple of games, that was certainly the case. Your thoughts? Everybody's talking, okay, this could be a dynasty in the making as far as the Celtics are concerned. Do you see it that way?
I think they already are knocking on that door. This is a team that's been in the Eastern Conference Finals for several years. I mean, 3, 4, 5 times when you talk about this iteration. 2 years ago, they should have won the NBA championship. Their immaturity as a young team trying to find its way with their two superstars being 23 years old at the time, they just didn't have enough to unseat the veteran savvy and the experience of the Golden State Warriors. And that was Golden State's really their last run, coincided with stopping Boston from making what could have been its first run. And then Boston has had some ousters in the playoffs that were mind-boggling and head-scratching. You know, this is a team that, you know, just the previous iteration of them, when Kyrie Irving was there and, you know, they had, you know, some of these other guys in the situation you're talking about, they came up short in the playoffs and couldn't get past Cleveland. Then they came back and they couldn't get past Miami a couple of times there. And when they did break through, they couldn't get past Golden State in the ultimate stage 2 years ago. Now they weren't going to be denied. Last year, they should have won game seven against the Miami Heat instead and faced the Denver Nuggets. That was their time to do it then. So they've been knocking on this door for a long time. They got over the hump this time. And I think they should be right back in the discussion again. They'll bring pretty much everybody back. Word is that Al Horford, according to the owner in Boston, wants to come back and fill a role there like he did last year. You get Porzingis back. You know, Derek White and Jrue Holiday aren't going anywhere. They're under contract. And now once you make Jason Tatum the highest paid player in league history, which will only trump the deal that you just gave Brown the other year, these guys are locked in. And I think they're going to be locked and loaded for quite some time. They're only 25, 26 years old. Who's to say, you know, what can happen injury-wise? But this team is set for the next 2-3 years to make a similar run.
Mike Wallace is the senior editor of Grind City Media. He joins us here on the program for a couple of more moments as we talk some NBA. What happens in the West now? Dallas made their run, but I look at the West. I think Dallas needs more, in my opinion. I think when you talk about Kyrie and Luka, they're really, really good. I think they bring most of the team back next year, but they need a little bit more, particularly in the West. What do you feel about Dallas in terms of getting back to the NBA Finals on next season?
You know, they'll have to make a decision on Derek Jones Jr. On the wing. He's been their starting small forward, sort of their 3-and-D guy. But other than that, all of these guys do come back. Luka's under contract. Kyrie's under contract. Gafford just got there. You traded and bought in his contract. He'll have to come up in the next year or two. But he should be solidified right now. And then Lively, they just drafted him. They still have the rookie scale contract for him. They do need another piece or two. I would like to see them do something else on the wing. They have to figure out what that bench looks like. I like Hardy, but he's a spark plug off the bench, you know, and I like Green, the young guy that they had from a couple years ago. Actually, he's probably 3-4 years in now. But they really got to figure out the Tim Hardaway Jr. situation. I mean, he's a guy on a big time contract. If you can trade him and either create some space or bring back another young wing player that you can rely on, because he fell out of the rotation. And then when you also look at, you know, some of the other bigs that they had back there as well, too, you know, they have to figure out how to utilize what they have after Gafford and after Lively from that standpoint. So, you know, they do have some moves to make. I think they can be right back there because of the way they defend and the way that they're mentally tough. This wasn't a fluke for Dallas, but you got to look at Dallas, Denver, OKC is right there, Minnesota. That's four teams, and that's not even including the Los Angeles teams who still are going to be trying to hang on to do something with the Lakers and the Clippers. And then after that, then you obviously have teams like the Grizzlies and then the Pelicans, and the Spurs aren't going anywhere. They're going to fast track their development process as well, too. And it's just so much more going on in the West right now. It's 1-8, and Golden State's not going to just wither away and die either. We'll see what happens with Klay Thompson, but they're not just going to go away either because they have Hall of Famers as well. So it's going to be intriguing to see how it lines up.
What's happening there in Memphis? Well, you know, we got the draft that's upcoming. You know, Ja. I mean, what does Memphis need to kind of get back into this thing, if you will?
You know, going into the draft and going into free agency, they've identified a big, you know what I mean? Somebody that they could put alongside, you know, Jaren Jackson Jr. So he can, you know, they want an active big like a Gafford or a Lively or somebody like that to be able to give them some more rim protection and some athleticism and some rebounding. This team had, you know, it was a top 10, top 12 defense last year in the midst of all of those struggles. And they need to get back to rebounding. They were still one of the worst rebounding teams in the league, one of the worst three-point percentage shooting teams in the league. And they have to, you know, address those two areas. They got to be more accurate with the three-point ball, and they got to be tougher and bigger inside because Steven Adams isn't there. They don't have another center right now on the roster with any experience to play alongside Jaren Jackson Jr. So that's going to be the priority. And then you would hope someone that can play in the pick and roll in a lob game with Ja Morant, whether they do it in a draft next week or free agency or trades in the week after that, weeks after that. We'll see how they make that happen. But it's going to be intriguing, not only with the Grizzlies, but across the board. And another team in the West I didn't mention was the most improved team in the West last year that didn't make the playoffs, and that was Houston. That team came on pretty strong, too. And they have a top five lottery pick this year as well. And they're in the midst of all of these trade discussions. So add all those teams up that I mentioned and then add Houston, throw them in there in the mix, too. So now you're talking about the West going 10 teams deep, 10, 11 teams deep next year.
Look, Mike, let's step aside, take a break, come back. I want to ask you, a big trade, semi-big trade went down in the NBA on Thursday. We'll talk with Mike Wallace more about that. Keep it locked to Box to Row.
Missed any of our shows? How about our conversations with some of the biggest names in sports and entertainment? Check out Box to Row Podcast at BoxToRow.com or on Apple Podcasts.
On last week's From the Press Box to Press Row with Donald Ware.
Listen, I'm one that tips. I'm going to tell you what perturbs me. I went to the sandwich shop. They ask for a tip. Like, I've never seen a place that is well known, a national place that is not serving you. Even at burger places, even at chicken places, that happens and they're not asking for a tip. Needless to say, I didn't leave a tip. I'm not leaving a tip for service that is supposed to be provided anyway at what is in essence a fast food place.
From the Press Box to Press Row is one of the hottest sports talk shows in the country. Join Donald each week as he takes you on a journey through the world of HBCU sports and pro sports and interviews with top sports and entertainment figures. That's From the Press Box to Press Row each week on your favorite station.
The others pretend. You're listening to the only sports talk show in America that actually cares what you've got to say. From the Press Box to Press Row, here's your host, Donald Ware.
Back here on the program, we're talking with Mike Wallace. He's the senior editor of Grind City Media. We were talking, of course, in the last segment about a number of different things. J.J. Redick as the new head coach of the Lakers, Monty Williams. We were talking about the Celtics. We were talking about the Western Conference. Speaking of the West, and one of the teams that you mentioned, OKC, has made what could be OKC was really, really good. I didn't know that they were going to make it as far as they did because they were a young team. They to me, reminded me of what Sacramento was last year. Played very well, but then playoff time, you know, they're young guys. Now they make a big move. Speak to the move that they've made that may take them to even another level.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about Oklahoma City already had a top three MVP candidate in Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. They already had the best record in the West, tied with Minnesota and Denver, and they ended up with the number one seed based on the tiebreaker. Now what they did was they made a move on the margins. They looked at what Boston did and said, okay, this is what Derek White and that kind of a defensive-oriented, offensive kind of fill-in-the-role specialist can do on the perimeter. This is what a Jrue Holiday did for us when you're surrounding him with the Browns and the Tatums and those kind of guys. And they said, okay, Caruso, Alex Caruso, come back down, rejoin us, and let's give ourselves one of those dogged defending guards who can handle the basketball, play a little bit of point guard, can shoot it when he's wide open, but also is going to be a scrappy, hard-nosed defender that can defend the 1-2 and the 3 position. Now, you put a Caruso beside this version of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and what you had to give up, obviously, was Josh Giddey, a guy who was a lottery pick a few years ago, offensive maestro. He can handle the ball, a big guard, sees the floor like Luka Doncic when he's good, but not much of a great shooter. Not much of a defender, and he sort of lost his way in terms of being that primary number one, number two option alongside Shai. So they were going to have to make a decision on Josh Giddey in Oklahoma City. They didn't want to pay him a whole lot of money. He had a little bit of controversy off the court with an NBA investigation of which he was later cleared from that standpoint in terms of being with an underage minor, but he was cleared of that. So that still kind of follows you. He needs a fresh start. Chicago will give him that. And for Chicago, you're saying, okay, this didn't work out with Lonzo Ball. He's going to miss another season. He hasn't been right for 3 years now. Now, if we're going to pivot point guard wise, let's go with the guy who was a lottery pick not too long ago. Still young, 22 years old, with a lot to prove, and he has his whole future ahead of him. So it makes sense for Chicago. It's a win now moment situation for Oklahoma City. And I like this trade for both. I can understand it from both ends.
Yeah, it's a shame really about Chicago because, you, to your point, you go back when Ball was healthy. That was a team, to me, that was on the rise in part because, you know, certainly of Ball. You know, last thought, what are you looking for? What can we expect in next week's NBA draft? Like, I'm not hearing a whole lot outside of Bronny James, who is not even reported to be a first-round pick.
Yeah, man, it's interesting because this whole thing about Bronny James seems to be a sideshow in and of itself. You know, they're positioning this kid as if he's going to be a first-round pick. Rich Paul, his agent with Clutch, has come out and said he's only worked out and confirmed he's only worked out with two teams, the Lakers and the Phoenix Suns. This guy isn't even really – if he was Bronny Simpson, he wouldn't even be, you know, a discussion point. He hasn't done enough. His resume doesn't speak to first-round potential at this stage. And because of his power brokering and because of who he is and who he's connected to, he's going to be placed into a first-round potential situation, if not in the green room. Like, we could see this kid in the green room, and it wouldn't shock me at this point. That puts a lot of pressure on Bronny. I want him to be healthy. You know, I respect and love the relationship he and his dad have. I've seen Bronny since he was 7 years old. You know what I mean? I've been around LeBron that long in different stops. So hopefully he can come in and try to make a name for himself even more so. But beyond that, this thing is all over the place. There's talk that Atlanta won't pick Sarr. They may go Ricochet, the other Frenchman, or they may go Donovan Clingan and trade down. Like, there's so much scuttlebutt all over the place with this draft. We'll see what happens next week when it unfolds. And I'll be there in New York, man, so I'm looking forward to it myself.
Yeah, I know you will. Again, check him out on X, or you follow him on X at My Mike Check. Also, check out the great work of him and his staff at GrindCityMedia.com. He is Mike Wallace, senior editor of GrindCityMedia.com, as he joins us here on the program. Mike, really appreciate the insight, man. We look forward to talking with you real soon.
Absolutely, man. Let's do it again, man. It's going to be a great summer, a lot more to come, and I can't wait to hop back on with you, man, on this wonderful airwaves with all of the networks and all of the cities that you touch base with, man, and just fortunate to be a part of it.
Great insight from Mike Wallace of Grind City Media. And look, we have known Mike for many, many years. He and I go back to his days of covering the Rattlers, the Florida A&M Rattlers, for the Tallahassee Democrat. At that time, I was in athletic administration at A&T. So that's how we first met. He has done his thing over the years. And now, look, he's running his own department with the Memphis Grizzlies. So we don't take Mike's knowledge and him coming on this program certainly for granted. Look, as far as J.J. Redick is concerned, yes, this is the first time that he's going to have any type of coaching experience. He knows the game. I mean, you can hear him on the broadcast. You know, I've watched him grow over these last however many years he's been on ESPN. And, you know, as an analyst, I think really it's just been this year that he's actually been a color analyst. And, you know, I think, and that's sort of the good thing, I think, also about ESPN is they probably realized that, you know, he wanted to be a head coach. And so this is, sometimes this is how you go about it when you don't have that coaching experience. I mean, look at Doc Rivers, look at Steve Kerr. Those guys were also in the booth prior to becoming head becoming head coaches. And so, look, they afforded him that opportunity as well as he was able to do from a standpoint on all of the different shows that ESPN has. He was able to come on and be in the booth with Doris Burke and Mike Breen, did a phenomenal job. He doesn't back down. He speaks his mind. When he was a player, He played with an edge. He was a good player in the NBA. Fantastic jump shot. I remember when he played at Duke. Really, really good player at Duke. Has a bit of an edge about him. And so he's going to bring that into the locker room. And as I think a lot of people are saying, look, no previous coaching experience. But the one thing that he does have is he has experience as a player. He and LeBron have worked together more recently on this podcast. So that, I think, bodes well for him. Because, look, there's going to be a learning curve. There's no doubt about that. You're not coaching. It's not like, okay, you're a first-time college coach. You're coaching grown men and two of the best players, one of the best players of all time and two of the best players currently in the league, in LeBron James and Anthony Davis. We expect that he'll be coaching LeBron James. Like, there's been some talk, but I mean, that we've had that every year. Will LeBron, in fact, sign back with the Lakers? I mean, but anyway, either way, he's going to be coaching grown men. The Lakers team isn't as bad as I think a lot of people think that it is. Is it an organization right now, or maybe this year, underachieved? But I think that was because you had guys like Archie Murray, you had, you know, Austin Reeves. They didn't get out to the great start, particularly Austin Reeves. He came around. Hachimura did not have the kind of season that I think the Lakers thought he was going to have, especially coming off what he was able to do not only last year, but in particular in the playoffs. And look, this is a team that made the run last year to the Western Conference Finals when nobody saw that coming. It is not a team devoid of talent. So I don't think it's in that bad a condition in terms of the team in of itself. Now, when you talk about the carousel of coaches, yes, that's a little bit different, and that could be, or it should be, of concern. 4-year deal for J.J. Redick, I think that's a solid deal, but we've seen it doesn't matter the amount of time with the Lakers. They're going to pay their guys regardless of whether they stick to the contract or serve out the duration of the contract. And hopefully the Lakers will have some patience with J.J. Redick. I think J.J. Redick is going to do a good job with the Lakers. Look, my time is about up. I thank you for yours. Thank you to Mike Wallace, senior editor of Grind City Media, for joining us today here on the program. So again, we've already asked you to save the date for Saturday, July the 20th. We have a location for the Box to Row, the 7th Box to Row countdown to kick off. It's going to be at Sticks and Vines in Durham. Come on out. Listen, if you're going to be in the area, if you're already living in the Raleigh-Durham Triangle area, come on out. If you're in Greensboro, come on down. If you're in Fayetteville, come on up. We're going to have a great time. Look, if you happen to be in the area, maybe you're from out of town, you happen to be in the area that particular Saturday, come on out. Wear the school colors, or wear the colors of your favorite school, and come on out to the event and enjoy. We're going to have a meet and greet with the coaches at 5:00. And that's 5, of course, 5 p.m. Eastern. And showtime is at 6 p.m. Eastern. That's Sticks and Vines in Durham for the 7th Box to Row countdown to kickoff. So come on out. Also, Box to Row getting ready to celebrate its 20th year on the air. Of course, August the 20th of 2025 will actually be 20 years. But the 20th year, the 20th season of Box to Row is going to begin, as a matter of fact, specifically on August the 21st of this year. We've got some things planned to celebrate the 20th year leading into August the 20th of 2025. So be on the lookout for that. And always remember to support those that support. Yo, Box to Row is produced by DW Communications.